Hi, everybody. Welcome into this midweek edition of Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. It's game day. The Grizzlies will take on the Washington Wizards. We'll talk a bit about that, but primarily this is going to be a mailbag edition of the podcast. It's been a while. It's been a while since I put out the call for you guys to throw some questions out there. I want to be able to answer your questions because God knows there are plenty of questions out there for the Grizzlies, and you guys responded with a bunch, and I will get to all of them here over the next few minutes on this mailbag edition of the podcast, also Draft Wednesday edition of the podcast. That's right, our friends at Draft. It is the hottest, newest, most fantastic app for those of you that love daily fantasy, want to win real money, but don't want to be intimidated by all the big sharks and big players that are at the huge sites that you know all about and the apps that have been around for a while. Draft is new and fresh and different, and it gives you a real chance to win. Plus, if you sign up with my promo code LOGRIZZLIES, you're going to get a sign-up bonus on top of everything else. You get a free entry in a big time contest that they've got, and it's just really cool. It's a really cool deal. So if you're looking for something new, something different, you want to have something like with your friends, for example, you guys can all band together, and sometimes I'll throw some contests up there too. I am at Locked On Grizz, by the way, if you want to follow me. That's Grizz with two Z's. At Locked On Grizz, if you want to follow me on Draft, and sometimes if you throw a contest up there, we'll do that. Sometimes, you know, you just want to get together with your buddies and have kind of a fun little thing that you guys put together. It's a single day draft. It's all the fun of daily fantasy. It's the best part about fantasy is drafting and doing all that. They take care of all the roster stuff. So if there's like a late scratch, an injury issue or something like that, they take care of all that for you. You don't have to worry about that. You just get to have fun, with it. And you can go little, you can go larger, however you want to do it. It's there for you. You can win real money real easily with Draft. Get it on Android, iPhone, App Store, of whatever you've got. It's there for you. It's Draft. It's Draft Wednesday. And again, use that promo code LOGRIZZLIES to help the podcast, to help yourself out, because you're going to get a free entry in a contest on top of that when you make your first deposit. It's Draft, promo code LOGRIZZLIES. Well, I mentioned the Grizzlies will be in action tonight against the Washington Wizards, and trying to just do something, get some positive energy, something happening, because it has just been a disaster, an absolute disaster over the last month or so. 15 of 16 losses. So I kind of have to say it once or twice to let it sink in, because the enormity of that incredibly bad run is hard to really wrap your mind around. They've lost 15 of 16 games. They are approaching all-time status when it comes to this franchise, and there have been some pretty terrible teams that have played basketball for the Grizzlies over the years. So this one, unfortunately, is spiraling in that direction. So it's not going to be easy. John Wall expected to return for the Wizards in tonight's matchup. No change really from an injury standpoint for the Grizzlies. Still no Mike Conley, still no Brandon Wright, still no Wayne Selden. Chandler Parsons will play. Of course, he's limited on back-to-backs, but this is not a back-to-back. So he will play, and everything else is kind of going to be as it was previously for the Grizzlies. And look, they gotta get something going. They haven't won at home, hadn't beat bad teams, hadn't beaten good teams. Maybe they can get it done in a big shock in Washington. I don't know. I doubt it, but maybe. So they'll try it, and we'll talk about it coming up. Also, as a little bit of a selfish thing, I want to remind all of you guys out there, especially those of you that are local, on the radio side, it's something that I do every year, and it's a really important thing for us. It's our Toys for Tots Radiothon. We're going to be over at a store called Family Leisure at 2120 Witten Road. For those of you, again, in the Mid-South Memphis area, we're going to be doing that tomorrow. So it's Thursday, December 14th, all day long, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. I'm going to be over there collecting toys and trying to raise money for the kids of Mid-South Toys for Tots, helping kids in this area. Now, for those of you that are not in the area, please donate to your local Toys for Tots or go to the Toys for Tots website. Nationally, you can do that. you know, very easily, and would love to have you donate. For those of you locally, please help us support the kids of the Mid-South. There's over 10,000 kids in this area that won't have anything unless we get out there and help. And that's what we're trying to do. You know, we need toys for little kids, you know, babies all the way up to teenagers, boys, girls, you know, bikes, trikes, all that stuff. It's all really important. It's all needed. And if you can't go and get toys and bring them, then by all means, just bring some cash. And it goes 100% goes right into buying the toys that fill in the gaps in what they get. They've got, you know, these sort of age groups and, you know, typically gender type groups that they put the toys into. And, you know, if they find that they need certain, you know, something for, you know, 6-year-olds or 7-year-olds, or they need more bikes or trikes or whatever it is that they need, then that money that comes in goes straight to that. Then there's no overhead. It's none of that stuff. It's all stays right here in the local area. So please, if you can, support it. It's something that's really near and dear to my heart. And we've been doing it for a while now and raised money, a lot of money, a lot of toys, and just trying to help bring some joy to some kids here, not just locally, hopefully. I mean, that's what we focus on. But for those of you that are doing it nationally, that's great too. Unfortunately, there's a need pretty much everywhere. So help out if you can. I would love to see you out there, and come by and say hello if you happen to be in the area. I'll be over at Family Leisure all day. I'd love to say hello to all of you. So let's get to the mailbag here momentarily, because goodness gracious, there are plenty of things that we are going to get to, and we'll do that here in just a second. All right, the mailbag is open. It is open, and you guys have sent a lot of questions. So let me go through them here. And again, I'm going to kind of work through these. Some of them will overlap, so but I want to make sure that I give credit to everyone who sent something in. So if there is a little bit of overlap, then I won't repeat an answer or anything like that, but I will kind of just go through this chronologically as best I can, and try to get through all of your questions, because there were quite a few, and some really, really good ones too. Some stuff that gives you some serious thought. Okay, so we'll start with Desmond, who is at D_Jax89 on Twitter. Desmond writes, if the Grizz just so happen to have one of the top five or so worst records in the league closer to the trade deadline, do we move Mark? Do we keep him and try to win 35 to 38 games with Mike Conley coming back? Probably, you know, and that would be losing the top end lottery pick, but retaining some sort of lottery pick, because the Grizzlies do own their pick outright this year. Said, to spin off that question, would you rather have Mark Conley, Parsons, plus a potential top 8 pick next season, or move Mark for another pick and move forward with 2 top 8 picks plus Conley and Parsons? Well, of those two scenarios that you point out, Desmond, you know, my inclination at this point, as I said earlier this week, and I've talked about for a while, is I think it's time to just move on and get what you can get. You know, unless the return for Mark is so bad that it's just embarrassing, then I think it's time to explore all options with regard to moving Mark, to moving Conley. You're not going to be able to move Parsons, unfortunately, so you have to accept that that's just the way that it's going to be with that contract. But I think at this stage, there's no halfway doing it. I think you got to go all the way with it. So in that scenario, I would rather move forward with 2 top 8 picks plus Conley and Parsons, and frankly, if you can get something for Conley, then all the better. But I at this point, I think, you know, I you could talk me into a scenario where you keep Mike Conley, but you know, if there's a way to move him, then I'm inclined to just say let's start over, because I think doing it halfway is only going to get you in some trouble. And I think the way that things are going, and we'll talk about this more, I'm sure, over the next little bit, but everything is kind of pushing you, to me, in the direction of being really bad really soon and staying bad for a couple of years before hopefully kind of swirling out of that and ending up being pretty good if you play your cards right. So to answer the first question, Desmond, and this is one that kind of, you know, a lot of folks have asked about, do the Grizzlies move Marc Gasol? I mean, I think at this point, it's a very complicated situation with Marc. And, you know, just in general, I think, I don't know how much I want to get into all this, but, I mean, there seem to be some impediments, for whatever reason, in Mark's mind towards, you know, towards moving. You know, I think it was strange to me that, you know, the last time Marc was a free agent, back in, I guess, 15, he had the opportunity to really explore a number of different options, including, you know, San Antonio, a franchise that he held in high esteem, and he really didn't. He didn't explore them at all. In fact, he took no other meetings other than, you know, Robert Pera, who, you know, talked to him personally and with whom he seems to have a very tight relationship, unusually tight relationship. That was pretty much it. He didn't take any other meetings, and he stuck around with the Grizzlies, and that is loyalty, but, you know, I wonder if it's not also, you know, complacency, especially if what he says he wants as a player is to be around a winning culture, to play the right way, to do all these things, to play with, you know, these sorts of players, to do the stuff that he talks about doing. That stuff is growing increasingly difficult to do in Memphis. It's pretty obvious that the Grizzlies are not winning a title anytime soon. They're not going to win a title within his contract, and probably not the next one either, whatever he signs. If he wants to win a title and he wants to be a champion, chances are that's going to have to happen somewhere else. So, you know, does he ever get to the point where he pushes for that trade? Or is he just satisfied to kind of be in Memphis and whatever happens, happens? I don't know the answer to that, but I do think that that's an interesting line of thinking when you kind of look at how this whole thing is unfolded with Marc and how he, you know, is perceived to be the coach killer and perceived to be the guy that is, you know, carving out his own little fiefdom here in Memphis. Like, what does that mean long term for him as a competitor if he really wants to win? So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what Mark's long-term situation is. I don't know if he's going to get pushed to the point where he asks for a trade. You know, my thought is, yeah, I don't know what the Grizzlies are doing with regard to the way they've handled this Fizdale stuff and everything else, but it sure seems as though they are going out of their way to make Marc look this way. They could have waited a week or two or whatever from when Marc had his little rant to fire Fizdale, and it wouldn't have looked quite as bad for Marc, but they didn't. They shined a big old spotlight right on Marc. So are they doing that because they're trying to get Marc to ask out? They're trying to break this complacency or this loyalty or whatever it is? I don't know the answer to that question, but it is something to think about. Would Marc be satisfied just playing for a team that's going through the motions or tanking or whatever? Again, I don't know. And obviously this team is doing a great job of stealth tanking right now without even trying to. And Mark's playing plenty of minutes and not playing especially well. So maybe you can keep Marc and tank all the way, and maybe he wouldn't put up a fuss. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I tend to think he would. I tend to think if they start to make moves, like, for example, trading Tyreek Evans or, you know, getting rid of, you know, serious talents, whatever talent they've got, if they make moves like getting rid of that talent and then really prioritizing just super young players that are very raw and obviously going in that direction, I think Marc would kind of blanch at that a little bit. But, you know, if they just keep going like this, is that going to get him to, you know, be upset with it and all that? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. So that it is something that bears watching, and it's a little unusual situation. The relationship that Marc has with Robert Pera to me seems to be something to watch for and is a little unusual in this day and age, and I think affects the way that this whole thing will kind of play out. Hope that answers your question, Desmond. It's probably a little long for that answer, but you asked a very interesting thing. Andrew Sillyman, at Andrew Sillyman. Sillyman? You could tell me. I like Sillyman. Andrew Sillyman, at Andrew underscore Sillyman on Twitter, says, which ownership situation is preferable from a GM / management standpoint, and which is preferable for keeping the team in Memphis long term? Of course, this is in reference to the buy-sell provision that has been activated, the Kaplan-Strauss group or para group. One of them will have control of this when all is said and done. You know, either para will buy out Kaplan at the price he sets, or Kaplan will buy out para, which is better. From a GM management standpoint, I mean, you know what you're getting with Robert Para. And if you like what you've got now from a GM and management standpoint, and I certainly don't know why you would, but if you like what you got now, then great. That's probably the way it'll be in the foreseeable future under Robert Para. I think that if Steve Kaplan and Strauss win this thing and take over, I think it's very likely that Jason Levien will return in some form or fashion, which I don't think is necessarily a great thing for the Grizzlies for a lot of reasons, but I think he'd probably be back in the fold somewhere. It would certainly be different, but would it be better? That's certainly debatable. As far as keeping the team in Memphis, I have to think, depending on... it's so much of speculation, so I don't want to get too ahead of myself here, but I would have to think, depending on the sale price, that would tell you a lot. If, for example, Kaplan was willing to go out there and really put a seriously strong bid of, you know, far more than the value should be, if, for example, it goes into, like, you know, where he would value the franchise at, like, you know, $1.4, $1.5 billion, something crazy like that, then that would kind of be a clue that he would be looking to move it, because I don't think that makes a lot of sense in Memphis. And Seattle is obviously just putting their arms wide open and doing everything they can to bring an NBA or an NHL team to this $600 million new arena that they've started the planning for. I would think that would be your canary in the coal mine, so to speak. There are obviously lots of provisions within the lease and the deal that the local owners have with with Robert Pair at this point, which I assume would then transfer over in some form or fashion to Kaplan. I don't know how that would work exactly, but there are provisions that are out there that would make it difficult for the team to move prior to 2021. Very difficult before then. I mean, virtually impossible. And then before 2027, it would be extremely difficult on top of that. The local owners also have a provision where they would have an opportunity to buy the team. So there are several things that could stop this from happening. But once you start getting into that kind of money, if it is that high of a number, you know, are there local owners that would be able to do that around here? I don't know. That's a lot. There's not a lot of evidence that those people are out there at this point. The local ownership group, for what it's worth, has at every opportunity thus far displayed no interest in trying to buy this team or expand their financial obligations. So I would say, to answer your question, it would be certainly far more likely to stay in Memphis without too much incident if Robert Para wins the day. If Kaplan wins, you know, it's not as if anything's going to happen, you know, right away, but I think it would raise a lot more eyebrows and would certainly get people talking about the possibility of moving the team after that. Let's go to another question. This one from Bruce Ryan, at Bruce Rye, who says, since tanking has been an NBA rebuild strategy for some time, have any best practices been discovered to prevent the dreaded eternal rebuild? Or is emerging from the NBA's primordial ooze a matter of optimism, patience, and dumb luck? I think that's a really good question, Bruce. Best practices, you know, part of it is really unfortunately, luck. You have to pick, you have to get yourself in the right position as a franchise to have the opportunity to make a really good pick. And then you hope that that pick works. You know, that's part of getting yourself in the right draft. You know, so it just has, you have to be very lucky in the sense that, you know, if you get out there in the right draft with the right player, then that works out really well. You know, maybe you get a really high draft pick in a bad draft. That doesn't work out so well. Part of it is timing. Part of it is luck. You know, as far as best practices go, I think, you know, what you've seen from Philly is that if you're going to do it, you should go all the way with it. You know, that's, in terms of tanking, halfway is not going to get it done. Just be really, really horrendous for a little while. Maximize those years in the wilderness. Try to do what you can to shed money. I mean, one of the things that they've done was, you know, get so low salary-wise that they were able to take on some bad contracts from teams and to hoover up an extra pick or two in the process. That's certainly a best practice to be able to maximize your return. Part of it is that you need to get those very high draft picks to get the elite players. Truly, at the end of the day, for a team like Memphis, the only way you're going to win a championship is to end up with a top five, top 10 player, and usually multiple top five, top 10 type players on your team. And the only way those guys are coming is through the draft. You know, it's very unlikely that you would ever be able to trade for them, and they are not signing for you as free agents ever. That will never, ever, ever, ever happen. So how do you ever get them on your team? Well, you have to draft them. And how do you get in a position to draft them? You have to be bad. So this is just, that's the logic of tanking. And when you have seen this core group run its course, then to me, the idea of tanking should begin immediately. I think you've got a great head start on it this year now because you're really, really bad without even really trying to be really bad. Now you can just go full force with it. It's an excellent draft this year, and you hope that one of those guys that you draft, you hope that you can get a stud. And that's a great place to start. And that's what Philly did. It has worked for them. You know, the market has to be willing to sustain and know that, you know, when you go to these games, it's, as a fan, it's going to be a crappy 2 or 3 years of, you know, you just have to hope for the young players to give you something to get excited about and all that. But the games themselves are not going to be great. But again, I don't know if you've noticed, but they're not very great right now. So these things, you're going to be bad. If you're the Grizzlies, you might as well try to control that as much as you can. So those are some of the best practices. Again, a lot of it is more than people really want to admit is luck. You just want to get yourself in the right position, and you hope that once you do, that things work out well for you. But there is by no means a guarantee of that, and a lot of it is out of your control. So you do the best you can with what you can control. Hudson Herndon at HHerndon93 asks, the Brooklyn pick has been thrown around as a potential return for Marc Gasol. That Brooklyn pick, of course, owned by Cleveland at the moment. How realistic is a trade of Marc Gasol and Tyreke Evans for Tristan Thompson, Iman Shumpert, and the Brooklyn pick? Has Gasol's value tanked too much for Cleveland to do that? That has been the discussion, and I think that's probably a little on the high end of what is realistic for Mark. I think it's not totally out of the question that you could get the Brooklyn pick, but I think it would have to come from a more desperate place. Cleveland would have to be a little more desperate. So I think in most cases you wouldn't see them do that. There's not really a need for them to do that. I do think Tyreke Evans would be a guy that would interest them, but obviously not for that Brooklyn pick, but perhaps for their own pick or something else of smaller value. I do think that's a landing spot if we get into the discussion about trading Tyreek. Has Gasol's value tanked too much for Cleveland to do that? That's an interesting question about Gasol's value because, you know, Gasol's value is very much relative to what you think he's going to be for your team. How do you play? Mark has been very specific about how he wants to play, about how what he thinks is the right way to play. Does that mesh with a pace and space type team? Does that mesh with a team that wants to, you know, be much more tempo-oriented? Mark, since he's essentially become halfway player coach now, the Grizzlies have slowed down unbelievably. I mean, the pace has gone to zero. You know, does Mark want to go and play for a team that gets up and down? Is that something that interests him? I don't know that it does. You know, does a team see Mark as a fit? That's one of the questions. Also, are they concerned about his health? Are they concerned about his contract? In around, you know, the league, it's become pretty obvious that Mark's defense is down a little bit. That's his value, and that is not what it used to be. He's going to be 33 in January. I don't know. I don't know that his value is. I mean, it's certainly not what it was 2 or 3 years ago. It's not what it was, you know, prior to his injury. It's still high. You'll be able to get something for him, but I think that Brooklyn pick is probably the very bleeding edge and would only be a very specific circumstance when you get something like that for it. Even though that pick, by the way, is not quite what people think that it is. I mean, you know, the Grizzlies are sitting with a record of 8-19. The Nets are 11-15 at the moment, which means that in terms of that pick right now is about 11th or 12th in that neighborhood. You know, the Nets are only 2 games or so out of the 8th spot in the East, and it's not inconceivable that they would be competitive for that spot for most of the year. I don't know that they're going to get there, but I think they'll be in that neighborhood. And that pick that you thought was going to be, you know, that's a top 5 pick. Nah, that's more like a top 10 pick at this point. Not quite the value on that pick that you thought. Edward at Grizz Tigerman asks, could Mark's attitude be the real culprit behind the lack of chemistry? Would it be hard for guys to play with a guy constantly tossing them under the bus? Short answer, yes. That is entirely possible. Is that the case? I don't know. I think that's hard to say for sure. But without a doubt, Mark, the players have noticed in the locker room when Mark is calling them out and kind of saying that you guys are dumb. Essentially, that's what he's saying. Your low IQ basketball players, they've certainly noticed that. And yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, I think Mark is not the easiest guy to play with. And now that Mark is the unmitigated 100% leader, you're seeing the results, and it's not very good. So yeah, I think there's an issue there. Guys don't dislike Mark personally or anything like that, but I do think it is hard to play with him. And I think he's very, you know, he's got a little diva attitude at times about how he wants the game to be played. And he expects a lot from guys. He expects a lot IQ wise and decision making wise and all that stuff. And when you don't do it, he's tough. So yeah, that's very, very possible. Will Walker at Will Walker 21 says, aren't we all overreacting? One down year yields a lottery pick, and we have the core back again next year. Is staying the course a bad idea at this point? My answer to you, Will, is yeah, I think staying the course is a bad idea at this point. I don't think that people are overreacting because, again, going back to some of the earlier discussion, what is it that you are really trying to do? At the end of the day, right now, for example, with this team, in order to make the playoffs, if you assume that you have to win, you know, 43, 44 games to make the playoffs, you basically have to finish 36 and 19. That would get you to 44 wins right now. It's a tough ask. That's a very high winning percentage. for the rest of the way for a team that has displayed no real quality on a consistent basis since very early in the season. So this year, no, I don't think there's any overreaction at all. The other thing, again, that goes back to it is, what is the core? What you say, we have the core back again next year. What is the core? Is the core Mark and Mike? Is the core Mark, Mike, and Chandler? I mean, Tyreek Evans is probably your best player this year, and we'll get to some questions about Tyreek in a moment, but you know, I don't know that he's coming back. So what's the core then? Mark, Mike, Chandler? Chandler's still in a minutes restriction. He still can't play more than 25 minutes a game. Can't play back-to-backs. You know, Mike is consistently injury-prone. Has been throughout his entire career. You know, he's now on the wrong side of 30. Mark, as I mentioned, will be 33. What's the core? What is the core? You know, and then what when you bring, if you bring Mark, Mike, and Chandler and whoever back with a lottery pick, lottery picks do not impact winning, or very rarely do lottery picks, no matter how good they are, truly impact winning. So I don't think you're not going to see whoever that is. You're not going to see the best from them for a couple of years. I just think at the end of the day, it's staying the course is a bad idea. I don't even know what the course is for this group right now. And I think it's time to move on. I was on that boat prior to the season. I'm still on that boat. I think it's time to move on, take advantage of the fact that you have your pick this year, and go on about your business. Josh at Biomed TGR asks, where do we go from here? Feels like a net situation with no assets and bad contracts, but worse with a terrible front office and ownership questions. Well, it's not quite a net situation because the Nets, for multiple years, did not have their picks or had their picks, you know, swapped with the Celtics, who were very good. So you either had no pick or a very low pick. The Grizzlies at least have their pick this year. Next year, they don't have their pick, but it's top eight protected. So if you are really bad next year as well, you will keep your pick. Top six protected after that. So at some point, you're going to convey that pick. But if you play your cards right, you may keep a high lottery pick next year and the year after. And then maybe you pass along in 2021 an unprotected pick that is not quite as bad. That would be the ideal situation. And as far as the terrible front office, yeah, I mean, there's major front office issues, major ownership questions. It does feel a little bit... It's not hopeless, but it's tough. It's tough, man. The assets that the Grizzlies have are not great. The assets to turn to a rebuild are not great. And the pathway to doing it is unclear. And there is no leadership that I can see from above to help steer it in the right direction. So you don't have any real leadership in the front office or any kind of a pathway or any kind of a, you know, an identity or how you want to go. Haven't really spoken about a plan. Just seemed like they're kind of flying by the seat of their pants. Everyone, you know, at FedEx Forum, I think is concerned about, you know, their jobs because, well, I mean, A, things are going pretty horribly, and B, no one is quite sure how this ownership thing is going to play out. So everyone is nervous. Then that's not really a good way to do your job. So yeah, in that sense, Josh, I would agree that it's a problematic spot. I don't know from an asset standpoint that it's quite as bad as the Nets, who just had all kinds of issues, had bad contracts on top of no picks. But they've done a pretty darn good job. I mean, Sean Marks has done about as good a job as you could have imagined with that group. And as I mentioned earlier, they're starting to play okay, halfway decently, when all is said and done. NDQ, at NDQ1125 on Twitter, says, is it time to stop thinking that Mike, always hurt, in parentheses, and Mark, too stuck in his ways, in parentheses, are the building blocks of this franchise and completely start over? Yeah, that kind of is in reference to the question a couple questions ago. But yeah, I mean, I think so. I think there's no building block of this franchise anymore. There's no grit and grind. Grit and grind, the assertion that they've made down at FedEx Forum that grit and grind is forever It's only forever in the sense of memory. You can always have the memory of that, those teams in that era, but it is not an ethos that currently exists at FedEx Forum at all, in any way, shape, or form. So I can't see the building blocks. Mark and Mike, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what you're building. Yeah, I don't know what the core is. I don't know what 33-year-old Mark and, you know, 30-year-old Mike, who is, you know, dealing with nagging injuries, I don't know what that gets you now. Mark, Mike plus blank. You know, what's the best case scenario for that group? Probably low, you know, 5-8 in the playoffs. You know, at some point, the playoff streak is nice, and I don't want to diminish it. You're making the playoffs 7 straight years, tremendous work. 8 straight years would be great. All that's wonderful, but you know, how many series have you won? How many real runs have you made? How many of those were realistic where you really had a chance to make a push? They gave the Spurs a nice challenge last year. You know, I think we all kind of knew how it was going to go, but they at least, you know, pushed him a little bit. You know, there was the year when everyone was hurt, and it was just the Spurs that was just an obvious, beat down. You know, you haven't seen very many series wins. They've only won one series since the year that they made the Western Conference Finals. So making the playoffs is nice, but actually doing something in the playoffs, that would be nicer. And in order to get a squad that's capable of that, you're going to have to find some new building blocks, in my mind. Tommy Stevenson asked the question that so many of you are asking. At TSTPHNSN. That's Stevenson without the vowels, basically. He says, can we legitimately rebuild if we tank with this front office? The same one that has passed on all-star after all-star for all-time duds like Thabeet and Mayo. Mayo is not an all-time dud. Mayo wasn't great for his position, but he by no means was he an all-time dud. Thabeet was definitely 100% all-time dud. Was absolutely horrible, embarrassing. You know, we've litigated that time and time again. You know how that goes. I've answered this question already. I'll say it again though. No, you can't sell a rebuild. You can't sell anything to the fans. All the fans out there are too smart. This is a smart group, and especially you guys that are listening to this podcast. I mean, obviously you've picked a great podcast to listen to, so you're right there, you're smart. Second of all, you're pretty savvy. You understand how this thing works. You can't sell to fans like you and fans that are out there for this team that you're going to make legitimate changes without making actual changes to the people that are making these decisions. You just can't sell that. I mean, Chris Wallace, it just doesn't, you know, regardless of how the decision-making process actually flows. Again, this is how it always works at FedEx Forum. Success has 1,000 fathers and failure is an orphan. Remember that. Whenever something's screwed up, it's never anybody's fault. Exactly. It's always somebody else. They always pass the buck. It's always the coach or the Michael Heisley, or no, it was Fizdale's deal, or no, that was this guy, or that was that guy. It's always somebody else. But when you've had one guy essentially that's been there for the decade, and you know, while the decade has certainly had some successes, so many of them have come from things that were done, what, 8 years ago? Zach Randolph acquisition, tremendous. The Marc Gasol acquisition, tremendous. Tony Allen, tremendous. But that was a long time ago. And what has happened since? And what was done to maximize that core group when you had that great run? What was done to really maximize those guys? Where was the backup point guard? Where were the shooters? Where were the squads that could take this and move it to the next level? They weren't there. They've never been there. Where's the plan? Where's the idea? It's all fly by the seat of your pants. So no, you can't legitimately rebuild in my mind with the same group. I think you would you would set yourself up for failure in doing so. Stephen Richmond at FaithMade72 on Twitter says, who are the leaders in that locker room? Right now, that's TBD. Nobody, I mean, Mark is ostensibly the leader, but I don't see a tremendous amount of locker room leadership. I think there's just a lot of questions about how everything is going to go. I don't get the sense that a lot of guys in that locker room are taking it as personally, the loss and the losing, as some of the vets are. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. They haven't really had any major alpha guys. Even with the grit and grind group, the core four, those guys, you know, Zach is a tough dude, but he's not really a locker room alpha type guy. Mike is growing in leadership, but he's not there right now, and he's still not like a Michael Jordan take charge kind of guy in the locker room. Mark is not that guy. And T.A. was a tough dude and a guy that would talk, but that wasn't his role either. So it's no coincidence that the best performance this group has gotten together has been when Lionel Hollins was there as the alpha guy, as the guy that kind of, you know, grabbed them by the scruff of the neck and pushed them. They haven't had that alpha guy from within. Here's another question from Jermaine Smith at J. Rom Smith, who says, why is it that when moves and draft picks are made, the local media praises Chris Wallace, but once it goes sour, they try to blame it on someone else or state they don't know who makes the decisions? Well, I mean, again, I'm not going to paint everyone with the broad brush, because there are media that do that, and there are media that don't. I'm not going to disparage individuals by name, but I've certainly noticed that stuff like this does happen. And, you know, the short answer is that there are guys that are not as critical of those people as they need to be. Sometimes it's because they want to curry favor. Sometimes it's because they just don't, they believe what they're told uncritically. Sometimes it's that they want to maintain those relationships. Sometimes that's just genuinely what they believe. It's a complicated thing. So, you know, Chris is a nice guy, and around Memphis, historically, nice guys have gotten more time, even when they haven't really done an adequate job. So that's part of it too. But, you know, in my mind, you have to just assign blame where it needs to be assigned, regardless of your personal relationship with people. And I think most of the time, eventually that happens. But when it doesn't, I think those are probably the reasons why. I can't speak for everyone. Don't know. That's up to each individual as to why they do what they do. One of my favorite names here, Dr. Poo Poo Yum Yum, been waiting a long, long time to say that audibly. Dr. Poo Poo Yum Yum at Crab Meat, just everything about that is great. He or she writes, what's the ideal order for rebuild? Top down, i.e. ownership to front office to coach to team, bottom up, or something else entirely? Who should we target for GM, who for coach? As far as the targets, that's all. I can't even begin to answer that question, because without the ownership stuff, there's no movement on that front. So there's no reason to even speculate on that. And to answer the first question, the top down is the only way that it can work, because those are the people that ultimately make the decisions about the rest of it. And if you've got people in place and you've got stability at the top, then it necessarily trickles down where it needs to. If you don't have stability at the top, then it's very difficult to get those other decisions right. It requires a lot of luck. And even when you get them right, a lot of times then you don't have stability to have faith and let those decisions remain in place long enough. We've seen coaches, and I'm not specifically speaking of Fizdale here, I mean, that's happened all around the league. I mean, go back to Mike Malone and the Kings and, you know, stuff like that. You can see good decisions that teams that are poorly run will occasionally make and then undo their own good decisions by their poor management. So to me, not only is it vital that you have good ownership, but nothing can really happen long term until you do have good ownership and good front office personnel. Otherwise, you're just kind of flying by the seat of your pants and getting lucky. With regard to specifically the Grizzlies, quite honestly, they have to get the ownership thing resolved because, you know, while it is possible that they could fire Chris Wallace or reshuffle the front office and move like Ed Stefanski into a more controlling role or you know, do something with John Hollinger, something like that. I mean, that could happen and that might change things a little bit. Ultimately, you're still kind of just reshuffling and as opposed to rebuilding and, you know, reestablishing a new identity or a new plan or whatever it is. You're just kind of shuffling some guys around. That's okay, but that's not really getting to the core of what you're trying to do or what you would like to ultimately change. So significant change can't happen until the ownership thing is resolved. If you, for example, were to just clear them out, let's just say, and open up that position, there's no GM that would come and no coach that would come right now that's really worth their salt without knowing who they're actually going to work for. So the ownership situation, that necessarily has to come first. JJ Baker at JJ_P_Baker asks, if/when trades do happen, what is the likely timeline? I'm thinking a Mark trade happens sooner rather than later. Other trades more likely closer to deadline. Yeah, I would think, what we've seen from Chris Wallace historically is that he's tended to make trades relatively early. So if that's the thinking, then it would be something early on. If you remember the Jeff Green trade, Courtney Lee trade, those were all pretty early on. One of the first significant trades in each of those seasons. I would think that they would try to strike pretty quickly. But the holdup again is that I still think this team has not organizationally identified what they want out of the season. I think there's still the thought that you're going to get something out of the season, that they're still going to, you know, be able to pull this thing out and get out of this spiral. And I mean, maybe they can. I don't see it, but as long as they think that, then that's going to put the brakes on a Marc Gasol trade. So in that sense, I think if you're going to see a move early, it's probably not going to be a big one from the Grizzlies. And I think a Marc Gasol trade, I mean, just to be quite frank with you guys, I think that's going to have to be, I think Mark's going to have to push for it. I think it's Mark's going to have to ask out. Otherwise, I still think too many people, too much loyalty, that relationship that Mark has with Para is pretty strong. I think Mark's going to have to ask out. If he does, then that obviously would change the dynamic. But I just don't. The sense has always been that they are really reluctant to trade Mark, and I think that's legitimate. Other trades, I think certainly, you know, Tyreek, and that's one that other folks have asked about. And I'll just, you know, kind of mix in a question here from James Haley II at J2 Pro, who says, is there any scenario where the Grizzlies can keep Tyreek next season? Very tough. Very tough to imagine. And that's why I think Tyreek is so likely to be moved for something. Maybe you can get a first for him. Certainly you could get a very good second or seconds for him. But considering his contract, one-year deal, $3.3 million, very, very cheap. And the fact that there's no bird rights, the Grizzlies don't have bird rights, whoever you would trade him to would not have bird rights. I can't imagine that you're going to, for the Grizzlies, it's tough to re-sign him because, again, you'd have to, well, there's just a lot that you'd have to do in order to be able to afford to pay him and then to be able to deal with the financial ramifications of that, bearing in mind the contracts that you got on your books right now, not easy to do. You'd find a team, but again, that team that you're going to trade him to, has the same problem you do, that they're not going to be able to re-sign him. They will have no, or at least they'll have no built-in advantage, bird rights, and all that to be able to do so. That will deflate his value as well. I do think you'll get something for him, but as far as keeping him, it won't be easy. It's possible, won't be easy, and again, if you are tanking, there's not really any reason to keep him at all. John Neal at JMN Tiger says, why is everyone so quick to move Gasol? If you continue to lose, you have a shot at some real studs, especially the kid from Duke to plug in next to him. I think move lesser pieces for picks. Thoughts? Well, there's no lesser pieces you're going to get for picks. As we said, I don't think there's anything else you could move to get any kind of reasonable pick. You know, again, a best-case scenario is that if you think that Mark is really, really good still, and you think that Mike will be really, really healthy, and you can get a top five pick who will instantly perform like Bagley or whoever alongside of those guys, and you can boost your way right back up, then you know, have at it. I don't have a lot of optimism in that for a lot of different reasons. So the reason everyone's so quick to move Gasol is because he's not played well. He doesn't appear to be happy with what's going on. He's not what he was, and he's not built for this group the way they want to play right now. So, and he's frustrating to watch, and he played some role in getting rid of David Fizdale. So, yeah, I like Mark personally very much, and it's a shame to see that how things have unfolded, but there's no question that it's complicated. And that's why a lot of folks are quick to move him. If you've watched him play, there's not a lot to get real excited about these days. KMO at Trey_Day901 says, what will Tyreek need to be here next year? Can we afford him, or do we have to get something before the trade deadline? We kind of addressed that earlier, but I think it'd be pretty unlikely. He also asks, has in the last 10 years, has any NBA team drafted worse than the Grizzlies? In the first round, no, not at all. Second round, they've had some successes here and there, but yeah, it's been a disaster. Raider Corey at CoreyKim55 asks, going forward, although I'm not a conspiracy theorist, why has Robert Parra remained so mum on all these recent events? I think it's inevitable that they will move eventually. I've never seen an owner that doesn't seem interested in his franchise. 5 years in and four coaches later. Thoughts? For sure, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I don't think you have to be concerned about the Robert Parra situation. It would do him the world of good if he really is committed to this team to just say something. It's not that hard to do, but he has been absolutely silent. Has been, even his, you know, Joe Abadi, the guy that kind of is his go-between, you don't hear from Joe. He's wanted to maintain a very low profile. It would just really reassure a lot of folks that that's the case, but I don't know how interested he is in talking. You know, he has spent some money on the franchise and upgraded some things at FedEx Forum. I think that's kind of the norm. There's lots of teams that do that. That's part of the gig. It's part of what they're supposed to do. It's in the lease of the FedEx Forum, I think, that they have to do some upgrades. I don't know that you need to be a conspiracy theorist to be concerned about the owner of the team being seemingly disinterested in what's going on. He does have a good relationship with Marc Gasol. They do communicate pretty frequently, according to Mark. And, you know, did that play a role in all this stuff with Fizdale? You know, maybe so. So at least there is that outlet. But yeah, I would love for the guy. I've told people over at FedEx Forum that, and it just doesn't matter. He's said from time to time that he would be more transparent, and he hasn't done that in the slightest. And I think it would really reassure folks He can't speak publicly on the details of this the situation that's going on right now with the buy and sell, but it's saying something would certainly help for sure. Final question from Socrates at Socrates901. How much is the ownership question going to play in the current decision-making process of trades, tanks, new coaches, and new GMs? Seems like unfortunate timing given the current crisis, but would explain hesitations and seeming lack of organizational direction. I think Socrates is very much onto something here. It is unfortunate timing, without a doubt. The crisis has caught them off guard with regard to that, but there is absolutely no doubt that the ownership situation plays a huge role in the malaise or the lack of direction that's happening, because how do you get a direction? We talked about it earlier. How do you get a direction if you don't have an owner? If you don't know who's owning the team, if you don't know how this thing's going to go, how do you get a direction? How do you plan for 3 or 5 years in the future when you don't know who the owner will be at that point? So yeah, that plays a huge factor in all of this. I think there are some things that you can do in spite of that, and honestly, some things they're going to have to do in spite of that. You know, they may not want to, but they're going to have to. They may not want to make some of these moves with this franchise being in a little bit of a flux kind of deal, but they're going to have to. You know, they may not want to start the process of a tank, but it may be thrust upon them, whether they like it or not. You may not want to move Marc Gasol, but if he asks out, then you're going to have to, and you're going to have to find a long-term trade and without knowing long-term who's going to own the team. Yeah, so it's not ideal, but it may come to a head. There's no doubt, though, that all of that question and the concern at FedEx Forum right now, it's definitely, you know, at times you just sense it. It's a real interesting time, and that could be interesting good, could be interesting bad. I don't know, at least as far as the front office stuff goes. On the court, it's certainly just bad. There's no getting around that. But, yeah, it's a palpable sense of tension, for sure, for a lot of reasons at FedEx Forum right now. That, I think, will wrap up the mailbag edition. I am going to go ahead and close up the old bag for now. We'll open it back up in a few weeks' time when we're closer to the trade deadline, and hell, we may have some trades to talk about next time we do that. Thank you for all the questions. Great questions. I hope I was able to answer them to the best of my ability. You had some really, there were a lot of questions that were really thought-provoking, so I may have elaborated more than I expected, honestly, as I look at the time on this thing. Jeez, this thing is getting out of hand on the length. But listen, it's a mailbag. I want to answer all your questions. So there you go. I'm giving you the best that I've got, giving you the information that I can give you. And I know you guys are hardcore, so I don't want to hold anything back for you. I want to give you everything I can possibly give you. So there you go. Thank you for all the questions. Thank you for listening. We'll see what happens tonight with the Wizards. Thanks for being a part of Draft Wednesday. As always, check out Draft and the Draft app. Android and iPhone, and we'll talk again tomorrow with a quick post-game edition of Locked On Grizzlies. Have a great Wednesday, everybody.